I believe it speaks volumes about who we are as Canadians and the values that we share.
Most heterosexual Americans certainly feel the ruling is in the best interest of civil rights. But I wondered what would be said from behind America's pulpits the Sunday following this landmark decision.
Mexicans have taken their changes slowly. This law definitely shows that there's a new open-minded way of thinking that's starting to emerge. The idea that tolerance ought to be one of the national values here, that's also starting to emerge.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A mainstream Australian church welcomes sexually active queer clergy, the Canadian government offers its marriage proposal, and Mexico's equality movement makes slow but sure progress. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 19, 2003. Australia's third largest Christian denomination, the Uniting Church, this week became the nation's first mainstream religious group to officially approve ordination of openly sexually active gays and lesbians. Despite strenuous opposition from conservatives who threatened schism, the 1.4 million member denomination's triennial assembly voted overwhelmingly in favor of the proposal, with estimates of support ranging from 75 to 90% of delegates. The vote came after more than 20 years of discussion, including at least 10 clergy dramatically coming out to the 1997 assembly, only to have that meeting decline to decide the issue.
The new policy is far from a non-discrimination statement and, in fact, barely opens the door to ordination. The decision as to which individuals will be ordained remains in the hands of the denomination's regional presbyteries, and those presbyteries can choose to reject candidates based on their sexual orientation. Selections will be determined on a case-by-case basis, and sexual activities can be grounds for rejection for both heterosexual and gay or lesbian candidates. Individual congregations can also refuse the services of a minister based on gay or lesbian orientation.
Other recent developments in Australia have concerned the status of gay and lesbian couples. In late June, openly gay Australian Democratic Party Senator from West Australia, Brian Gregg, attempted to win status equal to unmarried heterosexual partners for same-gender couples and their children, with an amendment to a federal pension reform bill. The move was defeated by more than 80% of the Australian Senate as the coalition government was joined by the opposition Australian Labor Party. The ALP spokesperson said that although the party supports equal pension rights for gays and lesbians, it doesn't want to handle reform in a piecemeal fashion. The government spokesperson declared there is no pension discrimination. Gregg called that absolute rubbish, noting that unlike heterosexuals, surviving same-gender partners have to pay up to 35% of their pension receipts in taxes.
But gay and lesbian couples fared better at the state level that week as Tasmania's lower house passed the ALP state government's relationships bill by a 7-to-1 margin. That measure would create Australia's first partnership registry, open not only to gay and lesbian couples, but to a broad range of non-traditional relationships, and would carry legal status equal to marriage under more than 100 state laws. The only disappointment for activists is its limiting of adoption rights for gay and lesbian couples to co-adoption of a partner's child, an inequality the Green Party tried to rectify with an amendment that failed. Tasmania's Senate won't take up the bill until after it reconvenes from its break.
In nearby New Zealand, the government this week revealed its plans to introduce a bill to create civil unions open to same-gender and unmarried heterosexual couples with all the rights and responsibilities of marriage. The bill to amend more than 100 laws has been drafted for the Labour Party by openly gay Member of Parliament Tim Barnett. However, the leader of the governing coalition's junior partner, the more socially conservative United Future, apparently hasn't been consulted in the matter and is apt to oppose the move. A discussion paper paper is expected to be made public in a few weeks. Although Labour has already indicated it will allow its MPs to vote their consciences, at least the government bill will be guaranteed a hearing in the Parliament, unlike a similar private members' bill already introduced by Labour MP Russell Fairbrother that's not expected to progress. The law is somewhat anomalous in New Zealand at the moment, since it provides for the dissolution of gay and lesbian and other domestic partnerships, but not for their commitment.
Barnett, along with openly transsexual MP Georgina Baer, late last month led the New Zealand Parliament to decriminalize prostitution, winning by a one-vote margin. That will put an end to solicitation charges, for which more than half of those arrested in New Zealand over the last 5 years have been males. While imposing health and other government regulations on sex work, the new law will make it possible to legally run a brothel or to benefit from another's sex earnings. Baer was eloquent in urging passage, referring to her own history as a sex worker and the many teenagers she saw die in the trade. She and Barnett held hands as they awaited the vote.
Still in the Southern Hemisphere, Latin America's first legal civil union was contracted this week by a gay male couple in Argentina. Marcelo Swintime and Cesar Sigliuti were the first in line for Buenos Aires's new civil unions, which are also open to unmarried heterosexuals and carry legal standing within the city's jurisdiction for purposes of hospital visitation and insurance benefits. Celebrating amidst rainbow confetti, Sigliuti also used the much-publicized moment to remember the many activists who struggled for the recognition but did not live to see it.
Croatia is just as socially conservative and predominantly Catholic as Latin America, but this week its parliament voted to extend legal status equal to unmarried heterosexual cohabitants to gay and lesbian domestic partners of at least 3 years' standing. That status includes recognition for joint health coverage, inheritance, and division of property in the event of dissolution. The advance can be credited in part to the European Union, which Croatia hopes to join as soon as 2007. The new recognition of same-gender couples is reportedly Croatia's first legal statute dealing with gay and lesbian civil rights.
Canada's federal government has taken its next step towards equal marriage rights for gays and lesbians, transmitting a simple draft of its bill to the Supreme Court of Canada for review. The draft states simply, "Marriage for civil purposes is the lawful union of two persons to the exclusion of all others. Nothing in this act affects the freedom of officials of religious groups to refuse to perform marriages that are not in accordance with their religious beliefs." The bill that eventually makes it to the Parliament will also amend existing federal laws to conform with the revised definition. Justice Minister Martin Cochon expressed pride in the nation as he announced the move this week. Canada's highest court is being asked to consider if the proposal is under the exclusive authority of the National Parliament, if it is consistent with the National Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and whether that charter's guarantees of freedom of religion in fact protect clergy from being compelled to perform marriages that violate their beliefs.
It's believed that if the proposal passes muster with the Supreme Court, a parliamentary majority will support it. However, Alberta's provincial government has already vowed to intervene to argue against the bill before the High Court, while the Opposition Alliance Party is strategizing to bring the measure to the floor of the Commons before the court has responded. Meanwhile, Cauchon has noted that the provinces don't have to wait for the federal law to formally redefine marriage and invited them to go ahead with issuing marriage licenses and registering marriages for gay and lesbian couples, as Ontario and British Columbia have already done.
Equal marriage rights dominated the discussion among 7 of the 9 Democrats vying to be nominated for the U.S. presidency at a first-of-its-kind forum organized by the National Gay and Lesbian Political Group Human Rights Campaign. HRC will invite President George W. Bush and any candidate who might challenge him for the Republican Party's 2004 nomination to a later forum, but that simple announcement drew laughs from the audience of 500 who doubted there'd be any takers. For Democrats, though, gays and lesbians are a strong and solid constituency, credited by many with having given Bill Clinton the edge in his first presidential election, and the current crop of presidential hopefuls are united in support of gay and lesbian equality as never before, up to and including military service. On that score, there's little to choose among them, except for the M word.
Only 3 are ready to support equal marriage rights. Al Sharpton, unequivocally. Ohio Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, and Illinois Congressmember Carol Moseley Braun, although even she would rather the states decide the question, as they do other qualifications for marriage. However, none of them is considered a front runner.
The other four members did support legal status for same-gender couples to varying degrees. Three, Senator from Massachusetts John Kerry, Congressmember from Missouri Richard Gephardt, and former Vermont Governor Howard Dean all said they'd support civil unions for gays and lesbians with the full range of legal and economic benefits of marriage. Moderator Sam Donaldson of ABC News did not let them off easy as to why they were willing to support gay and lesbian marriage in everything but name. They cited tradition, culture, religion, and in Gephardt's case, what might be a politically achievable. Dean, of course, actually signed Vermont's pioneering civil unions into law.
The final participant, Senator from Connecticut Joseph Lieberman, wouldn't support marriage and wouldn't go as far as the others even towards equal status. He called for a methodical review of what civil unions might be able to offer and said he didn't want to make a snap judgment. The absent hopefuls were Senator from Florida Bob Graham and Senator from North Carolina John Edwards, who sent regrets citing previous commitments.
And finally, in the age of AIDS, we've grown used to seeing a lot of giant condoms, but one erected last week in formerly sex-shy China might just take the beefcake. The Guilin Latex Company inflated its yellow PVC love glove in Guilin in Guangxi Province for World Population Day, promoting the message, control population growth, pay attention to sexual health, prevent AIDS. Size queens, picture this, 100 meters in circumference and 80 feet high. That's 330 feet around and 260 feet tall, enough to sheath one of the tourist city's major hotels with 20 stories.
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 19th, 2003. Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
Mexico has a new queer-inclusive anti-discrimination law, but has anyone noticed? You'll hear about the emergence of sexual minority issues in Mexican politics and culture later in the program. The Canadian government this week announced its draft proposal to create marriage equality, which is being forwarded to the country's Supreme Court for review before being introduced in Parliament, where pundits are predicting its almost certain passage. In his statement to the media, Justice Minister Martin Cauchon emphasized that the new legislation does not infringe on religious freedoms there, nor somehow devalue the institution of marriage.
Just two sections, but I believe it speaks volumes about who we are as Canadians and the values that we share. We live in a country that respects the rights of all its citizens, regardless of race, gender, and yes, sexual orientation. By expanding the definition of marriage to recognize the union of same-sex couples, we are recognizing that all Canadians have equality rights under the Charter. Let me add that extending marriage to same-sex couples does not take away any rights from opposite-sex couples, nor does it erode the significance or sanctity of marriage. On the contrary, it provides more Canadians with access to the institution of marriage. Marriage remains what it has always been, a reflection of the important commitment between couples, whether of the same sex or of the opposite sex. The decision to extend marriage to same-sex couples demonstrates a clear leadership stand on the issue and respects the role of both the courts and the people of Canada through their representatives in Parliament. By taking this approach, the Government of Canada is doing the right thing at the right time in our history.
Hi, I'm Chris Carter, New Zealand's Minister of Conservation and Local Government, and you're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Mexico City-based journalist Frank Contreras has reported for the BBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and other national and international outlets, and he's a founder of and regular contributor to the syndicated community radio program Latino USA. In the first of a two-part conversation last week, he spoke with This Way Out's John Beaupre about a standout candidate in the recent Mexican midterm elections.
Amaranta Gomez was the first transvestite to have at least an outside chance of winning a congressional seat here in Mexico's federal Congress.
And the apparent contradictions in Mexican culture and politics.
Mexico is kind of an unusual place because, really, I would say it's perhaps one of the most conservative countries in Latin America, socially and also because of the role of the church here. But at the same time, there's been this long-standing revolutionary stand brought in part because of the Mexican Revolution in 1910 and also because of the Institutional Revolutionary Party, which governed Mexico for 71 years. They often like to use this kind of revolutionary social rhetoric, workers' rights, these kinds of things. And so all of this is the mix that you find in Mexico.
In this week's conclusion, Contreras talks about recently enacted anti-bias legislation and the emerging public discussion of sexual minority issues.
Frank, the other big news on the anti-discrimination front in Mexico was the signing of a law in June of this year that has been touted as protecting the rights of a wide range of minorities, including lesbians and gay men. Was this law seen as very controversial, or has it been fairly widely accepted?
Well, actually, I would say that few people even know it exists here. It was signed into effect June 9th by President Vicente Fox. The law establishes that no one should be excluded from social well-being. That means on a basis of ethnic origin, sexual preference, gender, age, or even religion. These kinds of problems have existed for a long time in Mexico. But I think at the same time, it really hasn't gotten that much media coverage. It was sort of a flash. It got a few days of coverage, and that was about it. I think people have forgotten that it exists. Hopefully not. Gay rights activists here in Mexico call this new law an important government effort to improve civil rights in a country that really needs to do that. But there are critics of this law, John.
Right. The big criticism of this new anti-discrimination law is that it has little or no enforcement authority. Do you think that the law is going to be effective at protecting the rights of minorities, including lesbians, gay men, and other sexual minorities?
Well, talking to experts here in Mexico who really know the Constitution very well, they point out that it's nothing new to pass new, seemingly progressive laws that have no teeth. This kind of thing has gone on for quite a while now. This measure, by the way, does create a national council to prevent discrimination, but it is unclear at this stage how that national council will actually define the penalties or spell out what kind of enforcement will come in place now that the law is the law of the land. Again, critics say it simply has no teeth.
One could take the contrary point of view, though, and say that on the face of it, something so controversial as lesbian and gay rights and human rights, if it passed relatively unscathed in the public discussion, that might bode well for the fact that this is a movement in that direction.
I would certainly see this as a step forward. This is a law that really didn't exist before. And Mexico is a changing country, absolutely. It's changing very slowly. It's never been a country that has changed rapidly. Probably the most rapid change this country ever saw was when the first contact came with the Spanish conquistadors. Massive changes happened over a relatively short period of time. Since then, Mexicans have taken their changes slowly. And so this law definitely shows that there's a new open-minded way of thinking that's starting to emerge. The idea that tolerance ought to be one of the national values here, that's also starting to emerge. But I think it's going to take generations. There are still reports every other day from the left-leaning newspaper La Jornada here in Mexico City of attacks against gay and lesbian individuals, human rights abuses, people being attacked as they come out of clubs, this sort of thing. It's not widespread, but there's still this kind of hate that exists somewhere in the society. So I think that it's definitely going to take time, but the new law signed in place by President Vicente Fox will hopefully help to draw attention towards those kinds of abuses and eventually maybe spell out what kind of enforcement should come into place.
We're speaking to journalist Frank Contreras from Mexico City about lesbian and gay issues in Mexico. I wonder what your take on the three major parties. Apparently, the election kind of left things in an absolute balance between the PAN, the PRD, the leftist party, and the PRI, which has been in power for so long in Mexico. Are any of those three major parties seen to be aligned with issues of lesbian and gay rights? One would presume the PRD would have more sort of affinity for lesbian and gay rights.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. The PRD has been the outstanding party in Mexico. The left-leaning party of the Democratic Revolution stands out in its efforts to try to protect gay and lesbian rights here. It hasn't put forth clear gay and lesbian candidates yet, but I think you can see movements inside the party where they'd like to go in that direction. It does think of itself as probably the more progressive party in front of Mexico just now, at least on the national level. The other two main parties, the right-leaning PAN, which is Vicente Fox's party, that party has not yet taken a stance. I think they're starting to understand that there is a substantial population, like in any country, of gay and lesbian people here in Mexico, and they're going to have to start to try to deal with the issues. But we still haven't seen that yet. The former ruling party, the PRI, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, I think they're also starting to stake out a center-left position here in Mexican national politics, and they're starting to realize that they've got to try to represent all people. And so you're going to start to see that, but it still hasn't emerged yet. This is all very new in Mexico.
With that being said, where do issues of lesbian and gay civil rights or rights of sexual minorities fall on that sort of national agenda? It would seem to me with issues of social development, NAFTA, the privatization of industries, indigenous people in the south of the country, that lesbian and gay rights would be fairly far down that list of issues on the national agenda.
I think in general, all of those movements that you just listed off there, the opening up of the economy, the increasing role of electoral democracy, all those things absolutely play a role in trying to bring this important theme up to the forefront, but at this stage it really is not. It's only on occasion that you even hear the word gay or lesbian in Mexico. We just recently saw a massive national march here in Mexico City where gay and lesbian people took to the streets and had a very beautiful, prominent parade. You know, you can imagine the kinds of dress they used and the fancy feathers and these kinds of things to celebrate sexual diversity. But in general, you simply don't hear this in the public debate. When the candidate from the Mexico Posible party emerged, that was really something new, and it was so amazing. Amaranta Gomez was running as the first transvestite that she made front page news, and all of a sudden, there's no mention of what happened. People aren't even asking, well, what happened with that person? So I think it comes up once in a while, and then it disappears. So this is something that I think Mexicans are just starting to deal with openly.
As recently as 5 years ago, I spoke with Mexican lesbian and gay leaders, and they were a pretty depressed bunch. They were pretty gloomy about the prospects for the future and not very optimistic. According to the folks you talked to, people at that parade or any of the other lesbian and gay leaders that you have spoken to, is there any sense of renewed optimism in those communities?
There's still widespread complaints that gay rights and lesbian rights are not being protected. There's a sense that they're still on the far fringes of society here. But I think that as Mexico starts to change, as you see more and more movement toward an open society, a place where the politicians have to start to take into account people's issues, I think you're going to start to see more movement towards interest in these issues. At this stage, it's still kind of coming along very slowly. So maybe the people that you spoke with, John, 5 years ago are starting to have a little bit of hope, perhaps. Things have changed after all. I mean, one party that ruled Mexico for 71 years is now in the opposition. And so that represents a sea change. So this may open up other possibilities for changes, and that may include putting the gay and lesbian rights issues up on the forefront. But at this stage, it's just not there yet. And so I think that, you know, maybe people are starting to have a little more patience. They're starting to see the possibility, a little glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel there, but it's just not happening yet.
Frank Contreras, thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us on This Way Out.
It's a pleasure to be with you, John. Thank you.
For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
Lesbians and gay men and their allies rejoiced on June 26th when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it's perfectly legal for same-gender couples to have consensual adult sex in the privacy of their own homes. Miles Christian Daniels, a writer, documentary filmmaker, and former Christian youth minister in Wilmington, North Carolina, reminds us that the struggle for equality and acceptance, however, is far from over.
I first heard the news from a friend of mine who sent an email declaring, we won, we are free." Maybe a bit overstated, but I shared in his declaration of victory. And then another email came, one that seemed a little more true to my reality and the reality of so many other gay men and women. This email showed a picture of three well-known clergy kneeling in prayer outside the Supreme Court. The men were unhappy with the 6-3 ruling. Below this picture, one of a gay man in Houston, Texas, holding a rainbow flag. And next to him, a man with a sign proclaiming, "Homosexuality, hellfire, sin." Part of me wanted to believe these pictures depict the minority, that most heterosexual Americans certainly feel the ruling is in the best interest of civil rights. But I wondered what would be said from behind America's pulpits the Sunday following this landmark decision, and even more so, on Sundays for months and years to come. Not only from Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, celebrity ministers who thrive on outrageous sound bites, I wondered about the Baptist minister in Lone Wolf, Oklahoma, the Pentecostal preacher in Danville, Virginia, the conservative Lutheran minister in small town Oregon. What would these men and women of the cloth have to say about it all? After all, this is where most of us first heard words like sinful and abomination in relationship to homosexuality. This is where we were first told that God destroyed an entire city because the men were gay. This is where, as adolescents, we were commanded to beg forgiveness for our perverse thoughts. A few weeks before the Supreme Court's decision, I had finished shooting a documentary film about a transgender person who grew up in Beulahville, North Carolina, a small farming community. I also interviewed dozens of gay men and women who grew up in similar environments. And to each I posed the same question. What was your greatest challenge growing up gay in the South? Their answers did not include sodomy laws, opposition to gay marriages, or any of these hot-button issues. Without exception, the greatest challenge faced by those I interviewed was, and still is, religion. Over and over they told heart-wrenching stories of growing up in churches where ministers so carelessly preached messages of intolerance. They told of suicide attempts, drug abuse, and deep, dark mental and spiritual battles, all stemming from what they heard from behind pulpits on Sunday mornings. Yes, we should all view what transpired in Washington as a step in the right direction. But in the midst of our celebrating, let's not forget to say a prayer for the gay adolescent, still in the closet, who, while sitting next to mom and dad on Sunday morning, may be faced with the brutal reality that his or her war is far from over. I'm Miles Christian Daniels in Wilmington, North Carolina. You can write me at danielsm@uncw.edu.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Fenceberry, Graham Underhill, Rex Wagner, and Miles Christian Daniels contributed program material. Thanks also to Jason Lynn and to public radio station KPCC-FM in Pasadena, California. Reuben Blades performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can also listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. To find out how you can help keep This Way Out on the air and get some queer audio history and timeless music in the bargain, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. And thanks to AlternaBid and the Stonewall Society, you can still bid on some terrific items in an online auction to benefit This Way Out. Everything from collector's item books to CDs to historical political buttons. Look for the This Way Out auction area at AlternaBid.com. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WSUI Iowa City, Iowa, to UUU Nowra, New South Wales, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. By any means necessary, please do stay tuned.